All right. I'm ready. Are you ready? Do we want to get this? Let's just go.
Let's just go.
All right.
When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Go Loyola!
Is that still a thing?
That's still a thing.
Okay.
By the time this posts, it probably won't be a thing. But hey, Loyola Chicago, Final Four.
I did not think it would still be a thing at this point.
So. No, nobody did. So, you know, unfortunately, they're in the Final Four, which means they're playing real competition. But again, by this point, when this posts, it probably will all be over.
You never know.
And if it's not, hooray.
Hooray. Today on the program, we'll be discussing, as probably many of you guessed, the classic 1996 collection by Jim Davies, Garfield Tons of Fun.
Woo!
Yeah, this is, of course, the 29th collection in the opus that is Garfield. And one of the best in my mind. How do you feel about that, Brian?
Well, I think it's hard to narrow it down, right? I mean, there's so many great collections.
That's true. And the early ones do have their, you know, because it
the
was,
early ones
it was
have
so
their charm
in the beginning. Yeah.
Right.
You know,
and it as the years go by, it becomes obviously a little bit more sophisticated. Sort of the referential nature that comes as the comic carries, you know, as the comic ages.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and the, you know, as we'll talk about, the philosophy of the, you know, the ideas surrounding Garfield begin to coalesce, you know,
right,
come together. Yes. But, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. So, now, typically, sure, at this point, we talk about the news or some topic surrounding comics, but in deference to this subject matter, we are not going to do that, and we're not going to talk about any other topics, and we're just going to get straight into it.
Right. Because we teased that this would be one of the greatest comics.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So
I think we need to dedicate as much time as possible to it.
Yeah. And we should just dive right in. Shall I do the introduction?
Please do, Paul.
In 1979, writer and illustrator Jim Davis created what is probably the most recognized and most beloved character of all time. Garfield the Cat is a cantankerous fella that, through the guise of laziness, obsessive eating, coffee, and a disdain for Mondays and diets, has entertained millions for nearly 40 years in simple three-panel stories. But these deceptively simple gags, if you want to call them that, contain within them a deeper philosophical meaning and biting social commentary. And nowhere is this better illustrated than in the 1996 collection, Tons of Fun. By this time in Garfield's publication, Davis had solidified the characters that inhabited Garfield's world into the classic archetypes we know today. From John Arbuckle, the everyman, to Odie, the village idiot and playful savant, to, of course, the lovable cynic, Garfield himself. And with them, Davis plumbs the depth of the human condition and tells us more about ourselves than we dare admit. Whether it's the fear of growing older, gaining weight, or settling into a night of catatonic TV viewing, they reveal to us an existential feeling of dread, all the while making us smile. The strips are classic, the laughs are genuine, and that simple fat tabby makes us think more profoundly about life than we ever thought possible. Brian, I know I really don't have to ask this, but what do you think of Garfield Tons of Fun?
Man, that intro was beautiful.
Thank you.
And I think it really captures the entire oeuvre of Garfield and his extended world. Yeah. And I think that's important too, is the extended world of Garfield. The normals.
Yeah, well, they, like I said in the introduction, they're all archetypes, and they represent different aspects of the philosophy that Garfield is trying to get across.
Right.
Now, we should probably start with the character of Garfield himself. Garfield is a cat, but
he's so much more than a cat.
Yeah. Well, he's the typical, and I'm going to use this word a lot, existentialism. He's a typical existential cynic.
Sure.
You know, not in the traditional sense, but in the idea that he sees society and its trappings, and he finds it wanting. And because of that, he rejects it. And more to the point, he actually mocks it.
He's an anarchist.
Yes, that's a great word to use.
Yeah, he is an anarchist. At the end of the day, he is a true anarchist.
Yes, and in true, existential fashion, at the same time he mocks society, he still indulges in the pleasures that society has to offer. That's why.
Well, lasagna. Yeah.
Lasagna. That's the perfect metaphor for everything that Garfield represents.
Well, it's the weakness of the flesh.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's the weakness of the flesh that then becomes sort of the pleasure of the flesh. And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, even more than that, I mean, what you're saying, I absolutely agree with 100%. But it's also, you know, it kind of gives the metaphor, you know, life is layered. There's so much going on, but it's messy. I mean, in between, you know, all of our life events, it's not cut and dry.
Oh, well said.
Yeah. And that's what you see in these panels of over and over and over again. I said the phrase deceptively simple, and that's what it is, because there's so much more hiding underneath these simple layouts.
Like, yes, I mean it's really hard to to completely state the importance of a three-panel Garfield comic when faced with all of the problems of the world and all of sort of the crises we have of conscience and whatnot. And yet Jim Davis in these three panels every day has given us what essentially amounts to the solution to how we react to the troubles of our times.
Yeah, and exactly. It's how, you know, Garfield epitomizes that by acknowledging these the absurdity of our lives and making fun of it and finding a smile in it
and finding a hearty chuckle in it.
Yes, you know,
it's not just a smile. I find when I read Garfield that I don't just smile; I laugh out loud, and the joy that it brings me.
Oh yeah. Belly laughs. Yeah. Don't read it on the bus is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because I was actually reading this particular collection we're talking about, and I think Tons of Fun, the collection we're talking about, is a great example of sort of the Garfield canon. And I think at some point we need to talk about the Garfield canon. Well, it's a great example of the Garfield canon. There are so many other volumes that that help to sort of solidify and give us this world building that and this philosophy, as you have said, that I think we can't. It's so hard to narrow down greatness into one collection.
I know. I mean, and you know, so listeners know we talked about this quite a bit off air, and we chose this one because it's right sort of in the center, and it was sort of at the height.
It's when Davis is hitting his stride writing this. I mean, exactly. You can really see like him taking Garfield to another level at this point.
Right, right. I mean, even the title, like take for instance the fat jokes in it that
right. You know.
So the fat jokes are telling,
which never get old.
I know they don't. I know, and on the surface they're gags. You know, they're right. They're quick one-off jokes, but their simplicity belays something much deeper.
Right.
I mean, even the title, Tons of Fun, it says something about our society and our lives in general, you know, the weight of existence that's pressing down on us. And it's up to us to find the humor in it, you know. We find the humor in it, the tons of fun.
Yes.
You know, and that's what, you know, that's what always stands out to me when I read these is that, yeah, sure, you can read it as a quick one-off gag, but as soon as you think about it during the day, you know, after you've read them, and there's so much more that comes out.
Oh yeah, when I was reading this particular collection, I was reading it on the train on my way into work, and I found like I would try to like not read too much because I didn't want to get too inundated. I didn't want too many thoughts because you don't want too many thoughts when you're at work. But
you can get lost in them. Yeah,
and I found that, you know, the 20 panels that I would read on the train before I cut myself off And before I made my fellow passengers uncomfortable with, mm-hmm. as you said, the sort of belly laughs that I was doing, I would take much of what was those panels that I read, I would take them with me into my workday. And as a manager of staff, when I go into work, you know, I have people who are responsible to me, and I am responsible to them. And I found that I could take lessons from what I read in Garfield and apply them to my workday and apply them to the staff. And I found that they really responded well to the messages that I was getting from Garfield that I was relaying onto them. I found my staff really responding well to these messages. And I thought, well, see, this is, it's not just Jim Davis as a great writer. It is Jim Davis as a motivational speaker.
Wow. You know, that's absolutely right. I hadn't, yeah, you're correct in that. I mean, you know, that's something that I always lean towards the philosophical aspect of things. That's, you know, kind of where my head's at. So I often look over just the motivation that you can use in your everyday life. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
There's one thing. There's a recurring motif throughout this particular collection, and it's the motif of killing a spider.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, Garfield tries to kill it in many ways, but it always somehow comes back.
Yes. You know? It survives some, you know, I mean, there's a lot of violence.
Right. Well, you know,
adult violence in Garfield.
Exactly. But to me, this represents, you know, futility. The spider is scary. It's disgusting. It's a problem to be stamped out. But
right.
no matter what anyone does, it always comes back. And it's not until there are some panels towards the end where Garfield sort of embraces that, the inherent messiness and the scariness of it. And they sort of, you know, make friends with one another. And that's really telling.
It's the mouse too. You see that with the mouse as well.
Exactly. So yes, you know, and once they accept that the mouse is there, you know, once they try to get rid of it or pretend it's not there, that's when the problems arise.
Exactly.
Yeah, but once you also saw
again, like with Garfield bucking societal norms, you saw him making friends with the mouse.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. And there's one panel where he's playing cards with the mouse.
Yes. And on a symbolic level, that's just brilliant. You know, you know, it's no longer a pest. It's not something to be exterminated. It's something to be embraced and acknowledged.
And you're not playing with the mouse as a toy. You are embracing the mouse as a peer.
Yes. You know, if you take that a step, you know, understand that we all have problems and conflicts in our lives. But instead of trying to fight against it, you let it into your life and let it pass through you. It's very it's almost very Buddhist or Taoist in that right. respect.
Well, and I think Odie, you bring up sort of a Zen or Buddhist or what have you. It seems to me, and maybe you have a different take as someone who has studied religions, like Odie represents to me the more sort of Zen Buddhist ideal. Do you agree with that or disagree with that, Paul?
I do agree with that. I would take it even a step further.
Okay.
There's an idea expressed by Heidegger, and that's called thrownness. And the idea is that we're thrown into the world.
So throne, not as in a throne that a king would say.
No, like thrown, picked up and tossed. And this notion is that we're not. Yeah. So the idea is that we're not created for a purpose, and rather we're just sort of thrust into our lives. And it's up for us as individuals to find meaning in it. And everyone sort of fights against it. You know, Garfield is cynical. He rejects the trappings of society, and he kind of becomes he fights it in many ways. John is the same way. He's more confused. He doesn't understand that there is no inherent meaning, and he keeps trying to find meaning, and he's disappointed when there isn't one. But Odie, on the other hand, he seems oblivious, but he is in fact accepting the absurdity of life and just kind of rolling with that.
Right.
And he seems like the dumbest character, but in actuality, he's the smartest. He's the happiest.
He might be the most sort of centered.
Exactly.
Would you say that Odie is centered?
I would. I mean, he's nothing bothers him. He's always happy. Now,
and he has accepted all of the things around him, and he has absorbed them within himself, and to the point where he is willing to take the abuse, say, of Garfield, mm-hmm. as part of like his journey, and therefore he doesn't react negatively to the abuse, but he reacts as accepting and calmness.
Yeah, almost as sacrificial in many ways.
Right. Oh, well, we could almost say, is Odie kind of a Christ-like figure?
I don't think I'd go that far, but it's not that far off. Yeah.
I mean, he's taking on the sins.
He is very, beatific in that sense.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's really something to think about.
I didn't think about that, Paul, until just now.
Me too. That's
what I sort really... of felt like, the way we're describing him, it kind of came across to me as Christ-like.
Yeah, that's really something to think about.
I will have to I don't want to posit that as a definite thing, but I think this is a thing I'm going to contemplate for a little bit.
And that's the beauty of
this. Thank you for getting me to this point, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of this of this collection, or of Garfield in general, is that you can keep going back and you can keep finding new things. It's truly, I mean, many layered, a lasagna, basically. It's many layered. Let's talk about John for a second.
Okay.
John's
I'd also like to talk about Mondays, but yeah, let's talk about John.
Well, I hate Mondays.
Sure.
Yeah.
But let's talk about John first, because I think Mondays represent something.
Something a little bit deeper than that.
Right. Yeah.
Well, John is the everyman. As I was trying to explain before, he finds himself constantly confused by life.
Yes.
He expects there to be a meaning in everything. And he's always disappointed when he finds there isn't one. And it's just
when the meaning doesn't match
his
expectation of the meaning.
Right. And that's why it's such a great contrast with Garfield, who doesn't necessarily think that there's meaning, but he wants to, because we try to place meaning upon everyday things.
Right.
And Garfield will have nothing of it.
Well, John or Garfield is sort of he's the anarchist, and John represents the order or the attempt at order.
Yeah, the conformist.
Right.
Or he wants things to be ordered so badly, and I find it really intriguing that John is technically the owner of Garfield, but it looks it's the other way around completely.
Well, as any pet owner knows, that we are not the owner. It is the pet that owns the person.
We are merely the conduit through which the pet exists.
Yes. And again, it's so well laid out in Garfield.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant. I don't think enough can be said about Davis's approach
to comics. Well, as a writer, I think he's unparalleled in comics. I mean, there is nobody, I think we can all agree, there is nobody that writes like Jim Davis.
And to be
am I wrong here?
No. To be so consistent over almost 40 years, that's amazing. That's truly amazing.
To have never really changed over 40 years is it shows a great confidence.
Yeah, and to be at the same level
in his philosophical view on life.
Yeah, I mean, to be at that level, that highest level, consistently.
And the art, not only is he conveying these great sort of deep themes in his writing, but in his art, you see in the line work.
Oh, yeah. And the emotion, the expressions that he conveys in I said before, deceptively simple drawing. There's so much being conveyed there.
Right. Yeah. I could spend hours just looking at the panels without even reading the words. And I feel like just looking at the panels, I can understand what Jim Davis is trying to tell us.
It's a pretty outstanding achievement.
But I think at the end of, not at the end, but I do feel like we have to talk about Mondays. Because as we all know, Garfield is opposed to Mondays. And you probably, again, as because you have a stronger philosophical understanding of things than I do, so you may have a different take, but to me, it's like, what astounds me about Garfield's continual battle with Mondays and his the fact that Mondays always seem to affect him in a very negative way. And what I read into this is, now, Garfield is a cat, and he does not have a job. He does not work.
Technically, Monday should have no meaning to him.
Exactly. And so to him, Monday is just another day. It should be. Right. But what he brings in is like, so Monday is not different than any other day he has, except somehow it is.
Right. Well,
and what is it that makes Monday for Garfield, a cat who doesn't have a job? What is it about Monday particularly that causes him such great angst? Do you have thoughts on that, Paul?
I mean, I think that it is a representation of our existential dread, you know, our fear of not knowing. It gets back to that idea of being thrown into the world where we don't know.
Sure.
And Mondays, that notion of, you know, having to begin the drudgery of, you know, of our toils over and over and over again, you know, kind of like this eternal recurrence, if you know what I mean.
Right. And so go ahead.
Yeah, no, so that's what I think, you know, Mondays represent that dread, and Garfield, by that simple phrase, "I hate Mondays," is rejecting that dread.
So do you think that he gets, like, so his approach to Monday, is he getting that from popular culture? Is he getting that from John? Like, we're never sure if John has a job or what John does.
Yeah.
But we assume that somehow Garfield has, the concept of Monday has been introduced to him somehow.
Well, I think it's just a symbolic that, you know, we all have that feeling inside of us inherently that
right.
We're meant to do something. We're meant to be something. And when it doesn't happen, we feel distressed by it. And I think that Mondays just symbolizes that.
You know, Bob Geldof, of course, certainly had strong feelings about Mondays too. And I wonder if Garfield has studied the work of the Boomtown Rats.
It's possible.
Yeah. You
know, it's possible. I mean, their heyday was in the 80s, and that's really when that gag started happening.
Exactly. So I wonder if there is even a deeper level to Mondays too, or if Garfield is also, you know, mirroring the Boomtown Rats feelings about Mondays. I'm grasping at straws here because it's current events.
I really just think that Davies as the writer is really just using Mondays as that overarching metaphor, the analogy for our distress in the world. But that, again, that's just my take on it. I mean, that's my feelings. I mean,
I think it's a very good take on it, and I would be curious if others had similar views on the matter as well. I think that's very informative, and I've really appreciated sort of your insight.
Yeah, just this conversation has given me so much more to think about. You know, I want to go back and read it again.
I sort of feel like I should as well. I feel like Garfield is something that I can go back to and go back to and go back to and always find something new and exciting with. It's sort of like in the same way that I feel that way about like the Family Circus, and I feel that way about Ziggy, which are, I think, comic strips that are almost to the level of Garfield.
I would disagree on Family Circus. I mean, I my feelings. I kind of feel that Family Circus is sort of the Frank Miller, you know, of one panel.
Well, I mean, but you've always been sort of against that sort of one panel, a very sort of an important message conveyed in a very simplistic manner, as opposed to being more drawn out into like a three panel.
Yeah. Well, I think he
does the same thing too. I think that's why like Family Circus and Ziggy are so important, is that they're able to distill into single panels. Now, I don't want to say that these strips are as important as Garfield, because I think
we
both agree that Garfield sort of is the culmination.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, no, if I were to, you know, in my opinion, I would throw Peanuts in the same category as Garfield, the way Charles Schulz handles those existential feelings of dread as well. But again, not on the same level. Doesn't quite you know, it's good. It's very good. It's classic, but it doesn't come near the level of Garfield and Jim Davies' ideas and representations. So, Brian.
Yes, Paul.
Final thoughts. Do you want to do the honors of the reveal?
I will do the honors of the reveal.
Go ahead.
April Fool's Day.
April Fool's, everybody.
April Fool's Day. Oh, April Fool's.
Yes. Always look at the post date before listening to a podcast.
Of course, the question is, who are the fools?
Oh, we have been thinking about this for quite a while.
And I would be remiss in not sending a shout out to my friend and podcast listener, Jeremy Hoffman, who was the first one to suggest that we do this for April Fool's. So
yes, it was a great idea. And this was a lot of fun putting together. unfortunately, I did read a lot of Garfield.
To keep using the word unfortunately, I've read a lot of Garfield throughout my life.
Talk about existential dread.
Exactly.
So this was a lot of fun, but obviously it was not a real episode.
which I'm certain folks caught on to early.
I hope so.
I really hope so too.
Yeah. So next time we're going to have an honest to God episode with real opinions of a real comic. Yes. And this is up to you, Brian. What's your recommendation for next time?
It's mine. The next comic we're going to discuss for real is it's Love and Rock. Ultimately, it's Love and Rockets, which I think most readers should be familiar with. And it is the initial Palomar arc. Heartbreak Soup, written and illustrated by Gilbert Hernandez. And Heartbreak Soup is the first arc from Love and Rockets that involves the mythical land of Palomar, and it is Gilbert Hernandez's sort of great work. So,
who said there's no new tale to tell?
No new tale to tell, and we could talk about that as well.
That's how I learned about that, about this comic, was listening to that band.
And some folks learned about the band by reading the comic. Ba-da-ba.
Oh, so, like I said, everybody, happy April Fool's Day. This was a lot of fun to do. I hope we didn't piss anybody off.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I know. This is just fun. So thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, we value your opinions and your feedback. So leave a comment on individual episodes at collectededitionpodcast.com. Send us an email, comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. And if you leave us a review on iTunes, that would be awesome because it helps us get found. So until next time, everybody, keep reading comics.
And you thought this was going to be Watchmen. It wasn't. Be
well. Bye-bye. You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter @collectededpod. That's collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
All right. So that was fun.
It was.
Odious Christ. Oh my God.
I literally came up with that off the top of my head during the discussion. So I'm sorry.
No, it was great. It was like, oh, he's really going to roll with that one. That's awesome.
I took it as far as I could, and then I sort of liked the fact that I was like leaving it open for further discussion.
I just liked the fact that we were awed by, oh my God, could it be? Hooray. They reveal to us an existential feeling of dread, all the while making us smile. Having a hard time keeping a straight face.
You're having a hard time keeping a straight face on this, aren't you?
Yeah.